our Animal Control Advisory Board. Our next item of business is new business. Turn this over to Donna.
Okay, so code changes is first. And then there were some suggestions from another board member for additional new business. So let's do the code changes. Just to be fully transparent, these code changes, the way that the county legislative branch decides to do code changes is we have a work session. We bring any of these what are called biennial code amendments, which are cleanups of code or minor changes to code, are done every year. And we go take our suggestions that we either get from the public or the hearings examiner, or, you know, maybe we have an idea, we'd like to see a change in something. Sometimes we look at some things that City of Vancouver has done and we say, hey, that's a good idea or whatever. And we bring that and we make a presentation to the county council. And it's for permission to move forward code changes. They have the opportunity at this pre-planning stage to take something out. We don't want to deal with that. That's going to be too controversial. We don't support that. And then you get a final list of what you can move forward for public hearing. Okay. So this happened a little bit backwards than from last year, just due to timing. These have already gone before the council. They've given permission to move forward on these. Now there were many, many more that aren't related to animal control. So this is just the animal control portion that we're suggesting. So as we go through, there's only four. No. Eight. Sorry, I have six.
Eight.
Seven, eight. There's eight. So we'll start off with number one. The City of Vancouver recently passed a code change requiring veterinarians who are performing rabies vaccinations to report those to animal control. The exact same proposed language is proposed to update county code.
So the county has already acted on this?
No, the county has said we have permission to take it to a public hearing.
Okay.
Yeah. So the public is still going to, I mean, it'll go to another hearing before it's codified.
So this one, I remember, this one and the next one had some controversy with our board.
Yep.
When it came through. And one of the folks that was opposed to it was our veterinarian.
And we don't have one.
We don't have one. Mm-hmm. But there is some concern voiced by the veterinarians about mm-hmm. mandatory reporting.
On what basis?
Just curious.
Work
yeah,
you have to
ask that
veterinarian.
Oh, yeah, so overwhelmed.
Oh, okay.
Well, to be honest with you, all this is a spreadsheet that comes out of a report that for at a vet clinics that they have. I mean, we get some vets send it to us anyway. I think we get two reports, one out of Oregon. They just send it to us. It's an Excel spreadsheet. You know, they just run it in their software. How many rabies licenses to be issued this month? And then they send it off.
And what is the reasoning behind the animal control needing this information?
So the rationale is, you know, it's a deadly disease and it's a public health concern. Now, it's not rampant in Clark County, but that doesn't mean, I mean, right now I read an article last week regarding a community in, I want to say, in New England somewhere, where they're having, it just became an epidemic through the raccoons. And the raccoons were then spreading it to the cats.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like a big, huge health concern. So it could happen. We're seeing dog bites on the rise. Okay. We're seeing more dog bites on the rise. And for us, the mandatory reporting of it provides us a tool in our database to be able to immediately know when we go out on a bite investigation that whether the dog has had its vaccination or not. And if it does, it gives the animal control officer at that time the ability to say, okay, you're vaccinated, that's great. I'm more likely to say home quarantine is perfectly acceptable to be able to help make that decision with the best information, right? So they're required to be quarantined for 10 days after biting someone. Anyway, with immediate access to the vaccination status, officials can better identify the risk and make appropriate decisions based on that risk. So
my recollection was that the veterinarian, this is just my recollection, the veterinarian, it's too bad we don't have a veterinarian.
I've been trying like crazy. I offered someone ice cream to try and he loves ice cream.
But my recollection was that they were also concerned that people would not bring their animals in for treatment if they knew that it was going to be.
Oh, I remember you saying that.
If they knew that the information was going to be given over to animal control.
Right.
Maybe that is an opportunity for education because we're all on the same side, right? Mm-hmm. We're all like trying to do the right thing. The veterinarians are operating in this county. It's a lucrative businesses everywhere, right? They all have clients and nobody can get in. So it's not because they're, understaffed, but because they're overwhelmed with animals that want to be seen. So I just feel like,
why wouldn't you
want to be sort of like a team player of like, we're in this together, we're all in this together, we're all trying to like create an environment of responsibility and compassion. And maybe it's one of those things, maybe it's a joint campaign, maybe it's something that we get with a few vets and say, we really want you to do this. How would we make that really easy for you?
The health department just hired, I think recently, within the last year, maybe 6 months, I don't remember, communicable disease and a disease specialist, and they are focusing more on rabies. So they have specialists now that we call if we have any questions about rabies, because really it's the health authority that requires the law in the state of Washington to have the animals, the cats and the dogs, required to have a rabies test. So that's a Washington state law.
Well, I think it would be worth exploring to see if there would be a ton of pushback from the vet community, because they're already kind of geared up that if they feel like there's abuse, they report. If there's some kind of squirrely disease that they're seeing, they report. Like they're accustomed to reporting to government entities.
Well, and here's the thing, this was changed in the city of Vancouver. It is now in effect. I want the language to be consistent for other reasons. How many people in the county take their animal to a vet that's in the city limits? They're going to have to report. We're going to ask them to report, only give us the people that live in the city. That'll be a lot more difficult. But that's just,
Well, and this code does give them an alternative. They could just issue a license and then submit that license information. They don't have to submit the rabies information.
Yeah, I see the vet community as like, just a kind of an untapped partnership, that could be sort of massaged into like really being an ally to animal control, an ally to the advisory board, to licensing and vaccines and the whole kit and caboodle.
I know, I really wish we had a vet.
Mm-hmm. Remember, I sent you guys the thing that the public health department was also recruiting a vet, obvious for zoonotic diseases.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly like, what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about is the zoonotic diseases.
Yeah.
They're hiring, they hired a specialist, and now I think, you're right, they were also looking
for them. I sent that to all of you guys. I know I have weakness in this. I was like, oh boy. You've been trying.
I mean, I could get an equine vet on the phone. But these are for small animals, so that's up to you.
Do they need to live in the county, in Clark County, the vet? Like, if somebody were to want to be on this board, do they have to live in Clark County?
I don't know that it says that, but I would assume it's implied.
Okay.
Oh, that's interesting.
Who practices in Clark County?
Yeah, who practices?
Okay. Okay. Practices in Clark County.
Do you know Pam Ringer, Dr. Ringer?
Mm-hmm, I do. She don't think she practices up here.
Yeah. What about retired vets? Would that be something?
Yeah, we said another time. Because I tried a retired vet. That was the ice cream. Emphasis.
Should have bribed her coffee.
No, he loves ice cream.
So at the risk of getting off topic, let's just get back to this. So on all of these, I think we're under 3A, which gives us authority it's A, report to the Board of County Councilors no less often than once annually on recommended modifications or additions to this title and to the General Operations and Animal Control Board. So we're just making a recommendation.
Correct.
Okay. All right. And we probably should do these one at a time rather than all. So we'll just go, we'll do one, then two, and then
seven more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's do the first one. Do I have a motion with regard to section 8.19.140.
I might have one more question first.
Oh, sure.
I was trying to think about it from the animal protection's perspective as well. And obviously for animals, it's better if there's more animals that have the rabies vaccine. But also, is there a risk if we implement this that less people will bring their sick animals to the vet and then more animals will maybe suffer because their parents or owners are too scared to go to the vet because of that. But I don't know if there's anyone who can help me balance that out, but I'm trying to figure that out.
That was kind of the sentiment.
This is fairly standard across the nation, is to have mandatory rabies vaccine. Right? So I don't know that I think there would be, and I've done some research, I'm no expert. I want to say that equivocally, I am not. But I haven't seen anything where there's been a complete, there's no data. There's no data out there to suggest that. Is that because there isn't any data, or is it because, maybe no one's looked into it?
Yeah, I don't really think a lot of people are going to be like, oh my gosh, they're going to report it. Like, I don't think people are really looking at, I think the amount of your regular people that would even know that it's being reported are probably.
You either vaccinate your pets or you don't.
Right. Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. And this comes down to they're just providing an inoculation. So it's not saying the dog has rabies.
No.
So I think I'd like to make a motion that we just approve this word.
Okay. Yeah. Motion.
Second.
Second. Any further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Unopposed? Abstention? Motion carries.
I've never heard of pet anti-vaxxers. Are there such people?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. Oh, Lord.
Yeah,
Lord.
Especially with livestock.
Well, this is why
that's a big one. I could see that.
Yeah.
This is only domestic.
Not in bats.
No.
It's just dog or cat.
Yeah, dog or cat.
I'm going to take an executive privilege and let's skip number two for a moment and let's go to number three. Section 8.01.020, definitions running at large.
Running at large? I'm sorry.
Running at large.
Oh, okay.
Donna, the impetus for this?
Yes. So the impetus to this was to clarify the definition at the suggestion of the hearings examiner. We had a case where there was some he did not rule in favor because I can't remember the exact case.
He did not find a violation.
He did not find a violation and suggested that we tighten up the language. And I actually believe this is his suggested language, which I've run these by our legal team. So I think this comes out of another statute that he's familiar with that works for him in another jurisdiction. And so that was his suggestion. So I changed.
So it sounds like he's saying outside their personal property, so they can exclude others from the property.
I think it really boiled down to owner or guardian, and that it's really the physical control of its keeper. Whoever that happens to be, because maybe it's not the owner. Maybe it's a pet walker or something like that. And so
all right. Any questions or discussion regarding this one? Any motions?
I move that we take the reading as printed.
Okay, you have a motion, do I have a second?
Second.
Second, any further discussion? Hearing any, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, extensions, carries unanimously. All right, section 8.11.060, nuisances prohibited animals. This is replacing the word zone for area.
Right, so again, another suggestion by the hearings examiner. If you look at other sections of Clark County Code, it nowhere does it say a remote zone. It may have at one time. This didn't probably get changed when it was changed from urban growth zone to urban growth area. We're just making it consistent.
Okay.
Motion to accept.
A motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing any, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, extensions, carries unanimously. The next one is animal fee table. Looks like we're putting a fee for a potentially dangerous dog and then making an asterisk as a one-time fee per the Clark County Code.
So five and six go together. Five is the fee table that is reflective of the language in item six.
So we're adding potentially dangerous.
We are adding a potentially dangerous dog license fee of $200 one time. It's basically what it says to be dangerous or potentially dangerous requires a license. Okay, so right now dangerous dogs require a special license, and then we're adding potentially dangerous. This is also something that the city of Vancouver has adopted. Again, for consistency, that's one reason. And then, you know, you read the rationale statement. The establishment is basically to cover the cost associated with monitoring these dogs and helps establish a more accurate way to document and keep track of them. So if something happens in the future. And then we've added if after 3 years the dog has no further incidents, that the owner can petition to revert back to a regular license based on the altered or unaltered status of the dog. And that's just, you know, sometimes when we declare, when there's the potentially dangerous dog declaration, it is fairly minor, but it meets the definition. And it just may be a one-off. And there's no reason to label that dog for the rest of its life. It also gives us the ability to say, hey, look, we can track this better. We can see, oh, 2 years ago, you had a similar instance. You're now being declared dangerous. So.
Question on that?
Yep.
So there's, for example, the $200 fee for potentially dangerous dogs. Is that in addition to like the $250 fine for altercation between two pets and one bites the other?
It would be, those are separate. So the license is separate from a violation. Notice of violation that would be written with a punitive amount attached to it.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Do I have a motion?
Motion to accept as written.
Okay. Second. Second. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Extensions? Motion carries unanimously. We did both of those at the same time.
Yep.
Five and six. Mm-hmm. Go to seven then, section 8.07.040, subsection two, dog license fees.
So this is currently the way the code is written is a senior citizen over the age of 65 gets a discount on only one altered animal and then has to pay full price for any additional altered animals in the household. My proposal is just to simplify pass on a senior citizen discount to any pet in the household that belongs to the senior citizen. It's a little bit of a hit in revenue. I would say probably about $8,000 to $9,000 a year.
It could encourage more.
Well, and that's the next thing out of my mouth was, if you look at the list, most people own two pets. Some senior citizens are only licensing one. Is it because they have one, or they're only licensing one because they get a discount? And perhaps we would encourage the licensing of more pets for the seniors if they were given a discount for all their animals. So I consider it kind of a wash. And anything above two is additional revenue for us. But I just think it's the right thing to do in this day and age with the economy and, you know, the potential to have people license more of their pets, which is important.
So I'm noticing one's for dogs and one's for cats.
Yes,
so.
It's the same thing. Same thing.
Any motion, we probably should just include both of those. Mm-hmm. Right. Any further comments, questions? Do I have a motion?
You can do this time.
Okay. So I move that we adopt the senior citizens discount.
I'll second.
We have a motion. We have a second. Any further discussion? Hearing any, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries unanimous. All right, so let's circle now back to section 8.19.080, the appeals and assessments of cost. And so section 10, that's what is in the code right now.
That's right.
Okay. And the proposal is that the advisory board recommend that we change it to a different language.
Yes, I do recommend a different language. The outcome is very similar. It simplifies the process for the hearings examiner so that the examiner doesn't have to take into effect whether it's considered frivolous or not. It also eliminates the need of the officer who is writing the staff report to have to ask for it. And I've been directed, and it's, you know, we're a general fund department. We rely on taxpayer dollars. I've been instructed that wherever we can do cost recovery, we should be doing cost recovery. I introduced this similar language in code enforcement about 2 years ago, and it was passed by the board. So if you appeal a code enforcement action and you lose on appeal, you will be reimbursing the county for the cost of the hearings examiner's costs. Again, I caution, we are very intentional with the citations and the abatements that we write. We don't write them
in a profligate manner.
We don't. And as you've seen on some of these tonight, we might not even cite for everything as long as we're getting to the crux of what the real problem is. So I will tell you that the hearings examiner fees for service, with the amount of appeals that we're receiving and the cost for that service, which has gone up. So he's raised his price for the first time in 10 years. We're paying $240 an hour for his services. That includes prep time, preparation, the hearing, and the writing of decision. These cases are costing $1,000 for a simple case. And the fee for it is $250. People need to understand that that appealing to just have somebody tell their story needs to come here. They know they're going to lose. They know the evidence. We have the video or whatever it might be, and they want their chance to be heard. Doing it in front of the hearings examiner is not the appropriate place for that unless they're really saying, I didn't do this, and here's my evidence as to why. Mm-hmm. And so I think this, you know, is, like I said, cost recovery for the program operational costs. I understand where we're not charging people to appeal. We're just letting them know that if they do, this is a risk that they run. Mm-hmm. So they have to be thoughtful in their appeal process.
And that's my point, is that it would be more appropriate to me if they had an appeal fee, because that's, you know, typically you would get a fee for every kind of appeal that would dissuade some people from doing it. But if they had strong feelings about it, then they could risk the $200, $300 or whatever you did. This, I personally would, and we've talked about this before, this came before us a few years ago. In the legal community, a frivolous appeal or a frivolous lawsuit is something basically any rational argument. There's no rational argument for it. It's a high standard. But it gives the hearings officer a little bit of flexibility to say, well, you know, I don't think it's frivolous, but, you know, I'm also not going to rule in your favor. My concern with this is that it says the appellate shall be responsible. So I think it takes it out of the ALJ's hands altogether. If he finds that there's...
That's right.
Yeah. So he has got no just discretion anymore. He has to assess these fees.
If the appellant loses on appeal.
If he loses, yeah. But if the appellant wins, they don't get their fees.
They don't pay anything. The county eats that cost.
But if they hired an attorney to represent them, they wouldn't get their fees.
Well, they could sue the county for that.
No, I don't think there's any basis for attorney fees under that, though. Yeah. You have to have a code or a statute. Mm-hmm. And then... My other concern is what you said earlier, if they went out of three or four, you know, maybe there's four charges, they give one. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know how you, who's the prevailing party then? Mm-hmm. If it's one, if it's two?
I would say it would be 51%. So if there's four counts, it would have to be three.
I'm sure you would get arguments about that too. So I, you know, from my perspective, and I was a prosecutor and I would have loved to, you know, if I.
What kind of law do you practice now?
I do civil now.
Civil?
Yeah. And there's, you know, attorney fees. If you've got a contract, there are attorney fees. And, you know, that's the penalty. You go and do it knowing that. But you have to have a statute or you have to have a contract that allows that. Otherwise, you don't get your attorney fees.
Because it's the American law and state law.
The American law.
Yes. Right,
yeah. Right. Not the British law. British law is different. And in Britain, this is off topic, but in Great Britain, you know, you have consumers who go up against big, huge corporations and they get, you know, they might get assessed with millions of dollars. Right. The United States has decided that's not the system that we want. We want to be able to promote, you know, due process and bringing cases to court, mm-hmm. when, but not, you know, be faced with bankruptcy, mm-hmm. if you do so. Mm-hmm. And $3,000, that's, you know, not to exceed, that's a lot of money. So I kind of like giving the ALJ a little bit of discretion because he can always say, listen, I think this is completely irrational. And because of that, I'm going to assess $200, $500, $3,000, whatever it is. I could trust our ALJs that they're doing a good job and they're look out for, you know, not only the county, but also for, you know, the people who are bringing this. They're everyday people who come in, and they don't know law necessarily. They're, you know, they got a good case. And, you know, as a prosecutor, I've only lost one case during my entire time. So if I got attorney fees against all those people, you know, then maybe they'd all plead guilty. And I don't know that that's necessarily the, you know, due process. So I'm personally going to oppose this, but, you know, that's just my thought. All right, any other comments, discussions?
Well, do what you do in the law and give us the other side. Pretend you're arguing the other side. I'm curious because I don't feel I grasp everything you're going into here.
Well, you
already did, but do you have anything else?
It's exactly what Donna said. It's okay. A cost thing. Right? Yeah. And it costs the county money to do this. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, that's the government, right? And the government, you have to fund your processes and the new process. And that's possibly, in my mind, it's a budget request, but it's also, I think, a good idea to ask for fees. That's what you do when you file a lawsuit. You sometimes have to pay thousands of dollars to fees in order to have that lawsuit.
So how many of these hearing examiners are we having, like, per quarter?
So this last quarter, we had 13.
Okay. I didn't realize there's so many.
Yeah. So let me just
check in 3 months.
Yeah, just in 3 months.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that I have spent more in 1 year than I have than has been spent in the five past years cumulatively. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's.
Have you ever considered a fee for filing an appeal?
So right now they don't have to pay anything
to appeal.
To appeal.
No, that's their right. It's like, you know, you don't appeal a traffic ticket. I mean, you don't pay to appeal a traffic ticket. You just check the box and you show up to court.
And so what you're suggesting is to pay a fee every, like the same fee for everyone to appeal.
Yeah, so like in court.
Small claims, $50. Yeah.
And that's not worth my time.
Yeah.
But it might be if it was 500.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah. But here's so
that's not a wash.
Well,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
not. No, it's not, and it's a deterrent. Yeah. And I don't know that we want to look at people appealing as a deterrent. I would rather have this is the consequence if you lose. So come to me with a good case, and yeah. We're happy to hear your appeal. So I don't know that the county has taken. You know, the land use is different, and there's land use decision appeals. Mm-hmm. But this is really this is regulatory and enforcement, which is. Totally, in my mind, completely different. Mm-hmm. And so I don't like to discourage people from appealing if they have the right to appeal, but they need to be educated and they need to know, understand what the consequences if they lose. That's how I look at it.
It's pretty clear that you could be expected to pay up to $3,000 in fees for your appeal. The one thing I'd like to see, or at least to understand better, you can answer that, is it says if the appellant does not prevail, that should be defined because it could be three issues. And like you were saying before, is that how do you define that? Does it not prevail on any of the cases or any of the points? I think that should be defined. And I would agree with you. You have 13, 19 cases in a quarter. That's a lot of money to deal with.
It's a huge amount of the budget.
So
I had to go ask for extra money. Because I ran out, I couldn't pay my hearings examiner anymore.
Yeah, on the other side of that is I expect if you see this and you know that you paid $3,000 up to $3,000, you probably won't see very many appeals. I wouldn't appeal that, right? $500.
Well, that so this was a lesson that I learned from the code enforcement change of the language is the attorney said there has to be. Some expectation of what people are expected to pay, so come up with an amount. And I just took an average of, well, what was our highest case? I mean, our highest case in code enforcement at one point was an $11,000 hearing. It took, you know, however many hours in the public hearing and all that. That's the anomaly, right? I think the highest we've been on an animal control case is maybe close to 2,000. So the lawyers suggested a cap to people understanding what their liability exposure was.
Can you change the 3,000 from 3,000 to a range from $250 up to three?
No, they wanted a maximum amount.
Kim, would one or the other or both of you define frivolous? Because you said that sounds like a high standard.
Very high
standard. No rational basis that you could sit and quibble about that all day long.
It's very rarely given, but in the appropriate circumstances, the judge awards it and then penalizes the people. Right? So, you know, those people who just file lawsuits after lawsuits.
When is the public hearing for these code changes?
Hasn't been set yet.
It hasn't been set. So, does it make sense to table this one?
It'll be held before your next meeting.
Oh, it would. Okay.
You can make a you can make any recommendation you like, and I can look at options and do due diligence. It doesn't mean it's not going to go like this.
And that's what happened last time, right? We made a recommendation, and it still went before.
No, it didn't. I pulled it.
Oh, you pulled
it. I did pull it. And things have, you know, like I said, in those 2 years, things have gotten, those costs have escalated and the appeals have gotten, we've gotten more appeals, which means we're writing more citations, which means there's more violations. So that's the direction we're going.
I bet you though, what would happen here is there would be no more hearings, very few. I also don't like the fact that, you know, $3,000, you're going to be penalizing the poorer people. The richer people are going to say, well, I'm at $3,000 for buying, it's only $3,000.
There's this arena here.
And it comes to us. So we may be seeing a lot more of these.
Well, and that's one of the reasons. Well, and I encourage that actually, because I don't want somebody to just say, well, yeah, I did it, but I want my day in court.
Right.
That's going to cost you, sir. And I think that's the responsible thing to say, but here's another option for you. And here you can have your story told and you could potentially get a reduction in whatever citations or fines that you're being issued.
So something else I think to think about in like agreeing more with what you are proposing
is that the officer has already likely given multiple warnings. Like they don't, like you said, they don't write citations. Just they don't, they're not mailing them out and handing them. The officer has already done the job, already tried to mitigate between neighbors, already tried to do this. The officer is saying, you are clearly guilty of this. This, you know, part of our friends, our team has already said, you are guilty of this. Here is your citation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that, like you said, the chances of them, like, you know, if it being wrong, you know, like maybe there are our friends here that, you know, was it in the driveway or on the sidewalk? You know, maybe that would have been something for an appeal if they would have known it. But I think I like the idea that there should be way less on the appeals.
I think a lot of people are appealing. Because just to have somebody listen to what they say, because they don't think it was fair. It's very emotional. I mean, it is an emotional, it's more emotional. It's more feelings based a lot of the time. I'm just going to say it because in code enforcement, it's not that way. My cap on a code enforcement case is $7,500. Those cases are more complex and take more time for the examiner in some cases, depending on what it is. But I find that these are more feelings based and we're labeling a dog vicious. They don't like it. They want to appeal it. It's clearly done the thing that it's done. And it's more of an emotional, and I want to get away from that.
That comes from one of the due process issues. Mm-hmm. You just said the police officers are arresting people. They have good reason to arrest somebody.
Yeah.
And if you just said, well, why do we need the courts?
Yeah.
Just let the officer, you know, charge whatever he wants, and then, you know, he's going to appeal it to the courts.
Yeah.
Understand that you're going to come back and get all the fees. Mm-hmm. It's just, and I was a prosecutor too. I was on that side.
Yeah.
And it gives the prosecutor all the power in the world. Mm-hmm. Because then you know, okay, do this.
Yeah, but it's still an absurdly high standard, this frivolous being. That's crazy high standard. How would anyone even achieve it? I don't feel that to be a denial of due process.
It's not science.
No.
It's art, right? Okay. And so the ALJ is going to, this is how I think this might happen, might work, is that, you know, if the ALJ feels like, well, you know, I've got some sympathy for these people, and you know, it's a close call, whether it's on the sidewalk, whether it's in the driveway, you know, I'm going to find against you, but I'm not going to award any costs, right? You could do that, but not under this. Here, he would have to say, well, you know, it sounds like it was on the sidewalk, so unfortunately, I'm going to have to assess you these costs, and it took 2 hours, so it's $500 or whatever it is. And he has no discretion in that. What might happen there, though, is that he might then be more inclined to not to find violations on occasion, because if he feels sympathetic, or she, then they might not find them.
I encourage you to go back and watch any of our hearings, examiners, animal control hearings for the last few months. Their sympathy and really plays no part in this decision. It is just a matter of, did you break the code,
right,
or did you not?
Yeah.
And if the county hasn't met its burden of proof, then you're done. But I'm telling you, 98% are appeals are upheld.
So it's just like the loose dogs on the easement. They weren't doing anything wrong. And yeah, like we all want the dogs to be able to be free, but they were very clearly breaking the law.
Yeah.
So the judge would have been like,
absolutely 100%. I'm confident Joe would have said, your dogs are running at large. I have to charge you.
Yeah. It would have been like,
done.
Not even listening to anything else. Just like,
he would listen.
Yeah.
But that was a determination that he made about me.
Correct.
Because I hear several concerns about the rights and costs, and also I feel like maybe the animal would get some bad consequences if they're almost come home and say, I just lost the case, you got me $3,000, because some people sometimes are mean to their dogs for these reasons. I wonder if there's other ways to do the budget, so maybe by citation, or you can, you know, pay up to twice your original fee or three times your original fee, that way it's more like proportionate.
That's already in the code.
That is all already in.
We have first offense, second offense, third offense, right? An appeal is an appeal. And an appeal may take 5 minutes and cost somebody $400, or it could take an hour and a half, depending on the situation, and it could cost somebody $1,000. Jackie, what is our average, what do you think our average normal hearing is for Joe?
I don't think I put anything on his new pricing, right, which isn't too right different, but usually they're anywhere between 700 and 900.
So tell me,
can
something
I propose a wording change?
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead if you want.
Oh, I just wanted to ask, is there, oh, you know what, it just flew out of my head. So you go ahead and I'll find it.
Listening to different people, and I actually agree with Kyle about what he was saying about the right to sue, but I also understand what you're saying. So if you wanted to, you could say if the appellant does not prevail, still think that should be defined.
Sure.
The appellant shall be responsible to reimburse the county for the actual hearing examiner's fee, not to exceed $3,000.
Okay.
And then put an informational addition that says the average cost is $300 to $700.
I'm still going to post this. I would add that to may be responsible. I would give the ALJ a little bit more discretion to have a middle to say, I can't do anything about it, sorry.
But, do people know that, do you get the impression that people who have been issued a citation know that they have these two options? They have the option to go to appeal, or they have the option to come to hear.
So one of the things that I have imparted on my officers is to educate, right? Because I have conversations with them about the cost of doing business, right? Because I'm the manager, I have to have those conversations. And so while that's why we're intentional when we write our tickets, and that's why I ask them to be intentional in their explanation of what their options are. Because I would like to find out where they're coming from. I mean, I don't want to deter somebody from appealing. I want them to make the right decision. I want them to make a thoughtful, informed decision as what the consequences could be for whatever choice they choose, right?
So it sounds like what they're doing, because they're looking, like, if I got a ticket written and then I had these options, okay, admit fault and get a reduction, or take my chances for free and see if I can get it completely removed. It's the two options, right? Appeal it for free, for free for me.
Risking
for
paying $3,000.
So. Yeah, but right now, don't pay.
Let's be clear, it's probably less than that.
Right. Yeah, but right now, the wording is like, you don't pay anything. So, like, I could for free go and try to talk you into not charging me for my ticket, right? It's what the two options are.
How many citations do we get a year?
They're going up.
Do we know how many, a percentage of how many are appealed?
We have a total of 69 notices issued and 13 hearings.
For the month.
For 3 months, right? So I'll have a better answer for you at the next meeting.
So. And only six of them came here for a reduction.
Five, yes.
Seven.
There were seven.
Okay, there's seven.
And then there were five previously, so 13.
And again, this is only a recommendation. Us,
right,
and you are going to take it regardless.
I am.
Yes. It's another option.
I'm open to some suggestions on language, but you know, the bottom line is, you know, again, it's the cost of doing business.
Right, with being such a huge expense, you have to try to do something.
Yeah, and the last thing that I want to do, which I hope wasn't the case in previous administrations, is where they don't bother. It's too much. It costs too much to do that, or don't do that, or you know, let's issue them 10 warnings, you know, and it doesn't resolve the problem because we don't want to move forward because it costs us money. So
collecting against them might be a problem.
Which is a totally different issue. So,
I would make a motion that we support all these other ones, but not take a position on this one. That, you know, we can go up before the city council or the county council, mm-hmm. they can consider it.
Yep.
It's just not something that we promote or recommend. Not that we're opposing it, but not that we're recommending it either.
That's certainly a position you could take, being neutral.
So, I would make that motion.
That seems like an easy way out. I feel like you deserve support. I'm on the other side, I think, as we go on. Especially since the numbers are so small for them to win a frivolous anyway, or you guys to win a frivolous, it's hardly like it's.
Has he found frivolous?
He has, but it's been pretty obvious. And in that case, you know, we have tried to talk them out of it to protect them, you know.
Yeah.
To protect them, and it didn't work. So you're always going to have some of those. Because, you know, darn it, I want to appeal and I want to stand before somebody official.
Did they pay?
One did.
Mm-hmm. Out of how many?
I think we've had three frivolous for the year and one paid.
I just
paid so far.
do you give them the collection? Is that what you do?
Eventually. We give them warnings, late fees, and if they're still not contacting you for to do at least a payment plan, then it will go to
collections. Collections, then they take probably 60% of what it's.
Yeah, it's not successful. It's not very successful.
It's more the deterrent than anything.
It only matters to the people who care about the credit.
I'm curious as to, you know, what this looks like before the council. It is, in my mind, is a little controversial. I've seen this in the criminal courts. You know, they have right due process, right, to not be charged fees. And again, you know, it's kind of an equity thing for you too. You're arming the people who don't have money, but you're not really the people who do have money. They have their rights because they have money to do it. That would be my suggestion, is not to take anything we've gone up and maybe not support this one, but not recommend it, not support it, not oppose it.
There's another wording suggestion. You could also include that the fees could not exceed what they would have had to pay had they had their original citation.
But then you're not covering the cost.
Yeah. That's like meaningless.
What it if it's $100,
$3,000,
you're not. Well, is it good enough to say that we can offer due process because people can come here for free? Right. Yes, it is admitting guilt and asking for a reduction in the fee. You know, we have the power to sort of like slice that, don't we? And kind of broaden our.
It's already working because you already have heard more cases in two meetings than you have in 10 years.
Wow.
So, that education piece is already working. We're just saying we can charge you frivolous appeals, so be careful. And that's the same, it'll be the same message.
Right.
We just won't use the word frivolous. Frivolous.
So, I like your idea of maybe like to do twice, you know, so it's still more than the original fee if they lose, because then they added more troubles to us than they did before. But then I don't know if the math will not be.
And you're wearing different hats. You have that budget hat. You've got to cover those costs. And I'm 100% agreeing with Kyle about the inequities of affordability. But I sit with meetings for.
You can pay me $25 a month. So it's paid off.
Yeah.
I'm happy to do that. No interest.
I see frivolous motions in stockholder meetings. Are continuously growing and has taken all their time and effort to counter these little efforts to get, you know, certain things to happen, and everybody has their own point of view. But it's growing and growing and growing, and it's getting to be ridiculous. So I kind of lean towards what you're saying about not taking the position, because I personally believe the little guy should have the opportunity. But I also think that the frivolous stuff is getting ready to be ridiculous.
Yeah, it's frivolous, mm-hmm. so then they can't get the cost. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it gives the ALJ a little bit of authority there, and apparently he's exercised it at least three times. Mm-hmm. That's good. I kind of like that. You know, it's a pressure valve on this, so that you don't have to assess costs. But in the appropriate circumstance, where it's just there's no rational basis.
Right. And I think that when people read that, no one thinks they're irrational.
No, exactly.
Right?
Especially around
their. I have thoughts. A rational argument in their mind.
Yeah,
exactly.
The private drive, they're convinced it's half in their yard or their mm-hmm. property. Mm-hmm. But according to code, it's not appropriate for them to have the animal on the mutual drive.
Well, just a fixed false belief. Quite absurd. Oh, my dog could never do. I mean, if I could slap enough faces saying that, yeah, I'm kidding. But I mean, it's just so annoying when people like that, and you know, someone else is terrorized by that wolfhound running around.
What if somebody came and charged you and you didn't think it was fair? Mm-hmm. And then you saw, okay, if I appeal this, I know it's.
I would have the guts to make an adult decision. And take on an adult burden and say, if I'm going to do this, this is the risk I take. And then if I do something different, or I'll go do this, if I really believed and I had an argument, I would take the risk, because I'm a highly rational person. I will research the laws and the codes and before I even go into it.
You would look into your case, whether it's
quizzable or not.
Well, the example that I give people all the time, and that I say, use this as an example. When somebody wants to appeal, this isn't traffic court.
Yeah.
You don't check the box and show up and get a rejection just because you showed up.
Right.
That is not how this works here in this particular situation. So that's what people think. That's what their expectation is. That's what their experience is when you talk about citations or orders and appeals. And that is not the standard. And so we really go out of our way and say, hey, look, I use it all the time. I say it dozens of times in a year. This isn't like getting a traffic ticket. You can't just show up and get a reduction.
Yeah, the traffic ticket, you are responsible for yourself. You know mm-hmm. how that is. But when you have an animal, which is likely most of these are dogs, you have a predator as a pet. Exactly. You need to be responsible yeah. for your predator pet.
Yes, I like that.
So it's hard to. I don't know what I'm trying. I don't know how I'm trying to like voice what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
But like I feel like if I'm gonna have my predator pet doing whatever it's doing, mm-hmm. and I'm responsible for it, and there's obviously multiple animal control visits. Whatever, to the point to where now I'm getting cited and a case and all the stuff, I would feel like I would have to be pretty sure that my dog
didn't do to
risk that. I would be pretty sure I'd have video or I'd have some evidence. Otherwise, I would just pay my $250. So
I would like if we decide not to make a position, I'm okay with that. But if we decide to go with wording, I like the wording that I suggested.
Yeah, I wrote that down.
Did you like
because,
that?
Because then I look at it and go, okay, $300 to $700. I really truly believe in my case, and I might be willing to do that as a person who doesn't have enough money like others.
The only concern I have with that, as the years go by, this is the code. It's there forever.
Sure.
And so yes. In it 5 years, when the rate is now not 240, but it's 320,
yeah.
But you'd be changing the $3,000 mark too, though.
Well, but that was intentional. I don't see that changing for a decade.
Yeah, because you said rarely did they get over $2,000.
Correct.
You said the average is between 7 and 9. So approximately $800. With 13 cases, it's like almost $11,000 just in 3 months.
Yeah.
Of the budget.
And that heavily biases toward the wrongdoers, right. Well, as far as I'm concerned.
You could date that estimate of the average cost as of this year. To give reference,
yeah,
that would work, yeah. Because they were okay 4 years ago.
I didn't put an amount because I never my original proposal didn't have an amount. I only put in an amount because that was the recommendation of the attorney. So, I mean.
And I think as a reference point, average is, if you're going to use wording like this, will be more helpful. And I know there's a maximum that might last 10 years. If you go, okay, 4 years ago, the average case was $3,700. So I know it could go up by that. So if we go that route, I would recommend the wording that gives the people information. Mm-hmm. If we go the route with Kyle, I'm totally understanding of that position as well. So we talked about that previous meetings.
So I'm sorry, I think I'm not following you. What is gained by your smalling the amount? Whereas, because I mean, the expense to the commute to the taxpayers is $3,000. How is yours helping anyone except the biased or the wrong?
It says up to $3,000.
Not to exceed.
When you look at that, you're going, I can't, again, I'm not in that financial realm to be able to afford that. So it discourages anybody with lower income not to be able to participate in this process. Mm-hmm. When you say that, it could go up to that amount, but you can see that the average case in 2022 was $345. Then you can say, okay, reference for that information. Mm-hmm. Now I can judge. It's not a $3,000 thing. It could be $3,000, but
yeah.
The average is this.
The conversations that are happening in real time with the officers and or me, if you pick up a phone call to me, I'm not reading you that section of code. Yes. What I am saying is, if you lose on appeal, you will potentially have to reimburse the county for the cost of the hearing. Currently, the cost of the hearing is running about $700 to $900. You just need to be aware of that. Those are the conversations that we have when we write these citations and talk about appeals. I have those conversations. The officers have those conversations.
So it's not written down anywhere? Like, is there a spot for someone to check? I want to do an appeal, or I am guilty and I want a reduction.
It's on the back. Yeah.
So can it say what he's saying with the average thing? You know, like, can you have that conversation on that sheet? Would that make it different?
And just add some wording to the bottom line.
We could do it there, and so they're informed when they're reading it.
So it's right in front of them and say, yeah. As of 2023.
I would prefer that than putting it in code, because it's going to be irrelevant.
Yes, because that would be, we try to avoid that.
For the time
that would be easier to change.
Yeah.
And it would be right in front of them, and they are marking the box that says, with the average case costing this much in 2023.
Can we do both? Can we make a recommendation of that wording to send on with you and vote to not take a position as a board?
Yeah, absolutely.
But you have to change the code. You can't just change this. You have to change the code.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm trying to get away from frivolous. And you lose, you pay. And
it's draconian to be.
Yeah. And I come from and your point is well taken, and all of it, because I'm in it and I see it and I've been doing it for a long time. And I also know that we're very intentional. And so that's, you know,
built in.
That's built into my
position. The same thing about officers too.
Correct.
They're, you know, doing good deeds, so we shouldn't question them. Mm-hmm. Or if we were gonna question them, is we were gonna give them a penalty.
The reason why I proposed the wording change is that amount of money, the average $3,700, doesn't seem that much out of line what kind of families we've been dealing with today.
So why have you ever explored like a $400-$500 fee to
appeal?
Because that would have the same effect. You would get less appeals. It's not free. And you would get
the beginning. I would have to ask the attorneys, because we've never, I think years ago that was proposed in code enforcement and it was not supported. And that may have been by the council or board at the time, or it may have been, I don't recall, but I would ask the question.
Because at that point, you're getting funding, maybe covers perhaps 2 hours of time, if it's $500. So, you know, the ALJ can limit his time 2 hours. He'll spend more than 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And then they're rolling the dice, and they may lose that $500, and they may not. But here, it's a little bit more like gambling, you know. Mm-hmm. know it's at risk. It's a lot more, 3,000. I don't know exactly what it is.
So here's the thing though, on an appeal, you pay $500 to appeal because that's our time. And what if you win on appeal?
If you win on appeal, then you would refund that.
The fee would be waived, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because you wouldn't charge them $500 if they.
So then that's really not a fee to appeal.
Well, it would be because most of the ALJs, they're ruling in your favor. Very rarely are they not fighting in your favor. So you would be getting those $500 for each one of those. Mm-hmm. And it would have the same impact of reducing the appeals. Mm-hmm. It would be coming to us, I think. I think that's where they're going to come next. And we're going to have a lot more of these. But, you know, we're free.
You can go one step further. You can charge a $500 fee for the appeal. If they win, you can include something that says if you want to ask for a reduction of fee or a removal of fee to the advisory board, you can do that as well.
Well, and they already have that, so right. They would be able to do that as an alternative. That's right. Why it's going to be coming to work to us.
Yeah.
I don't think they're allowed to do both. You either can admit fault and ask for a reduction with you guys,
you make a selection.
Yeah.
So I can ask the question. And if there's some sort of change that I can make based on that, or if there's interest in that, I can send it out to the board, you know, separately.
So why don't we do this? Why don't we take no position on this? Let you go, mm-hmm. ask those questions, and then perhaps it doesn't even come back to us on
correct.
That. Mm-hmm. So I would make a motion to take no position on this.
Are you comfortable with that, Donna?
Sure.
Was that no position come with the request to add that number on the computer?
We can do that anyway. Oh, okay. It only happens if the code changes, really.
The more information for a person, the better, because it eliminates a lot of problems.
Yeah.
You go, okay, I don't really want to spend $500 to this appeal. It's not worth it, or I am willing to do
it. It would have to be. Because mm-hmm. if they don't say that, then it's kind of a bait and switch, or right? Saying, oh, well, the app has a lot of money, well, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So it would have to be.
Okay. Well, or we can, you know, someone make a motion to support. You can shoot me down. I think I will. I'll make a motion to support it as you wrote it. You guys can all shoot me down, but at least then we took a vote on something. I believe in what you're doing, and I love your suggestion of adding it on the form, and you can
right there in front of their face, and they know how much the average thing costs, so they know. But then also, like, pay up to $3,000. So if their court case, whatever, costs $11,000, they're still only paying $3,000.
That's right.
Yeah. So if we,
I think that's reasonable.
If we don't take a position, you still can move forward with that.
Correct.
With that
item
based on all of these notes and ideas and. Shake them all out and put them in there.
I can.
And you could still present that at your public hearing.
Yes.
Okay.
In question, so the information you're taking is the exact wording you had. She said exact wording. I prefer the altered wording.
I put down the reimburse the county for the actual hearings examiner fees.
Did you mind adjusting to that?
Is that, I thought you said you weren't happy with that.
No, I'm fine with
that. Oh, sure.
Actual is what we do. What we do. That just clarifies. I like that.
Yeah, I like that. Uh-huh. That kind of meets all the needs. And then I loved your suggestion. So I'll motion that with Robert's changes and what you had said. Just people could second or not.
A second or not. That we're not taking a position and asking Donna to continue to carry on that information.
That's a different motion. That's that Kyle's right? Motion.
Yeah, my motion. So since my motion is
first,
let's do my motion first.
Yeah.
No position. And then are you seconding?
Well,
we could do a second motion after.
Well, she proposed to also take no position, but send on the information.
No, she proposed taking a position to support.
Yeah, support with
your wording and that put on the paper.
Yeah, support with amendment.
Yeah.
Parliamentarian procedure.
Did you do one at a time?
Yeah, oh, no, exactly. No, I didn't know you were ready to make your
actual motion.
There's
a fact.
Just one quick question. Normal. Like you're used to. I believe you said that you don't need to file
money or pay money to do an appeal? Is that correct?
Not in the criminal context, in the civil context.
You do, okay.
I'll give an example from my own experience. I had a small claims court against my builder, the first and only court case of my entire life. And I prevailed, but the judge made a lot of errors. And that significantly did not come up with the money that they were supposed to pay, and they overtly breached the contract. So I had to appeal. I had to pay, what was it? What I had asked for the whole amount, even though I knew I wasn't going to get that anymore. And even though it found in my favor, I had to pay $8,000 to appeal. And I did it because you questioned me if I'm at stake. I got, of course, I got that money back. I owed no money for anything, but it was sitting. I had to get a cashier's check that day, take it down, and I still prevailed.
Okay.
But that's a lot. I mean, yeah. But anyway.
No, thank you.
Neither here nor there, but just an example.
No, yeah. Thank you.
So, go ahead if you want to.
There is a distinction between criminal and
civil. Yeah, that was civil. That was small claims.
So,
yeah.
And, I'd be interested. It's an interesting legal issue about whether, you can't charge criminals. They want to have a trial. You don't charge them for that. You don't have to get a fees. But you also can't recover your costs. But there could be a constitutional thing that goes on there, and far beyond what we should be talking about today. Mm-hmm. But it is an interesting.
Again, issue. Criminal and civil are different.
Totally
different. And I have never, I'm not aware of, outside of a land use appeal, paying for a land use appeal, I'm not aware of any enforcement or regulatory fee for an appeal. In any neighboring jurisdictions that I'm aware of.
And this is not criminal, right? So it's outside criminal, which is a different, is it civil?
Well, it's different ball of box. Okay, cool. No, thank you. So were there any seconds for
him? I second Kyle's motion to not take a position.
And we can follow that up with, something else.
That's
after
right.
That,
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm.
With language, mm-hmm. We would support on the view, I don't want to take any.
We haven't taken a vote yet.
Right, I'm saying if we do that, we can vote.
So,
but I'm opposing that because I support the other approach that I feel I could comfortably take. So, that's fine.
All right, so we have my motion and a second.
Mm-hmm.
Any further discussion? All right, all in favor, we probably should do our hands. All in favor, raise your hands. And two, opposed. Okay, next, motion fails.
And then now I'll propose the one that I proposed with Robert's language change and your form supporting you guys to have that chance to get that. So I need a second.
Before you do a discussion, I'd like to point out my mode of what I was doing. I really agreed with Kyle because of my life experience and what seeing that situation. But I also wanted my second choice out there. And that's why I proposed the wording, mm-hmm. and that's why I did it. Okay.
So we have a motion. You need a second.
I'll second.
Second. Any further discussion? Then, all right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Thank you. Good work. Philosophers and lawyers.
And now we go out and have a beer and have a great time.
It's not personal.
Right now.
It's all logic and,
We still have other stuff here.
Yes.
We have the DOC Code of Ethics.
Yeah, these were just a handful of things that I had been thinking about and wanted to throw out there, and I'll blast through them as quickly as I can. So I just felt it was important for this entity to adopt the code of ethics. Something that sort of struck me the last time, especially because we're doing these appeals and with the fee reduction. And even though Clark County is a big county, it's also a small county. And we're all animal people and we know animal people and we have people who are friends. And if we bump into having individuals who are
response to a disagreement and one of us knows one of those individuals, we should realistically step aside from that. And so right now, I mean, there is a code of ethics that exists for the county. I was going to bring some samples that I round that, but I was like, okay, I'm a little jumping the gun here because I just wanted to make sure if everybody thinks that that's a good idea, I would be happy to pull together a draft and then just sort of float it out to everybody and we could discuss it at the next meeting and perhaps adopt it. I think that it can be really basic, really straightforward, but I think that we're all operating with integrity here. But somebody from the outside, especially when we're making decisions about people's money, that they may say, you, I know them, and they're friends with so-and-so, and that could be problematic. And I just wouldn't want us to, you know, to be scrutinized unjustly. So I just thought that might be a good idea.
Yeah, I did want to say, somebody on the last one, I did know of one of the people.
But I was able to not mention it to her that I was not going to ask her about it. So I'm like, it's not fair for me to ask her about it. I'm just going to hear what the gentleman had to say. And we could be reduced his fees, and he was very nice.
Yeah.
So when someone recuses themselves from the vote, I think there should be an opportunity to discuss how you could do it and not be biased.
Yeah.
Because I might know the person three houses down from me. It doesn't mean I'm not going to make a judgment because I don't associate with them. They're not somebody I hang out with.
Right.
But I am very familiar with them and they are very familiar with me. So we should be able to present that argument if that happens to one of us.
They're guiding principles. And so yes. I think that's a great idea. I have a code enforcement lead officer who's lived here for 40 years, mm-hmm. 40 years. And he's been working at the county 30 of those years. He knows so many people and mm-hmm. he's had to take action, mm-hmm. enforcement action against people that he's familiar with. And, you know, me as a manager understand, I know, I can tell, we have principles and nothing in his behavior has ever given me reason to believe that conducts himself in any other way than professional. So I think if that were the case, you would know.
Yeah, and you step up. And in my previous career, I have thousands of people that I had contact with. I mean, it's large number. So I think I would be able to make that judgment, and I would be able to make that argument to you, and you can, you know, we can make the decision.
Yes, I agree. I agree that we should be able to. Okay, be like, okay, by the way, I know one of these people, and this is my thing. Like, or maybe like announce it before we go into talking, like, admit that I know somebody or whatever. Like, maybe we can put that in your wording.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I can.
Not necessarily recuse, but someone come out with and just be like, I know this person.
Transparency,
I think, would be key. I'm representing equine businesses. And not that I know everybody, but it is a huge, small community.
Yeah, I think and I know everybody
know a lot of people. And so to be off of every single one of every equine appeal that appears before us, that would be kind of sad as the one equine representative.
The person who has that information, right.
Yeah.
You know, and of course I'd be as fair in everything as possible.
Yeah, I think it's something that still people can sign, so you're aware and that we can say these are, you know,
yeah, I trust everyone in this room that everyone has integrity and the ability to separate their personal feelings from what is before them. I think my concern is from the outside looking in.
I appreciate you brought that up because I didn't know how to, except for just not to say anything or ask her any questions. I didn't know how to go forward with that.
But I do like the transparency. I think that would be really, really good.
Yeah.
So I'm getting there's a consensus here that we think this is a good idea.
Okay, so let's talk about it. Okay, so I can come up with a draft, and we can work through it.
I would suggest that we think about two readings of this, so at the next meeting, because we like to redraft things and have language and everything. So I would say, let's have it for a first read at our next meeting.
Okay.
And then we will look at it, maybe make some suggestions, revisions, and then bring it back for a vote at the next meeting.
Sounds good.
Love it.
That sounds great.
All right, then now we're at the form official committee to tackle multiple issues.
Okay, so something that had already come up was doing a type of a committee to handle appeals, because like Donna had mentioned earlier about.
Well, then we won't be here till 10 o'clock every time.
Right. I do them on a regular basis. And I think committees are a way that we can sort of like really move fast in a lot of ways, because I feel like the appeals thing will really help reduce those costs and give us also, with animal control officers are out there doing their job, which is then generating more need for that conversation.
I love the committee idea.
I was thinking education would be one, just to figure out what would be the best way to go at educating on behalf of animal control. Like, what does that look like? And we don't have to sit here as a big group and talk about these things. We could, three of us.
What are you interested in? Pet licensing education campaign.
Right. And we can go have some coffee a couple of times, and then in January, the next meeting, come together and say, the education committee has come up with these ideas, and then we discuss them as a
many meetings in between the actual meeting.
The big meeting.
We used to do that.
Did you used to do that? That seems to be, I would think, would be effective.
How long do you think?
Just a couple.
Just before COVID. 16 years ago?
Not the Humane Society.
Yeah, not this one.
So to address your issue, how many committees are we talking about, or are we going to have a meeting committee that anyone could go to that meeting, and we can say on this meeting coming up, we want to discuss this issue, and have one committee that deals multiple issues, or a separate committee for each issue is my
question. Or if I kind of laid out a handful of issues, appeals, education, revenue opportunities, just figuring, and I feel like the revenues opportunity would be kind of a short-lived committee of let's look at the whole picture and do a deep dive into what are untapped potential revenue streams for animal control. And that could be something that just a handful of people get together, and then we discuss that and what we found, what we thought of, brainstorm it out, and then that committee would maybe fade away. The Humane Society contract is coming up for renewal at the end of next year. And I know that there's going to be some big requests, and that's understandable, right? They're going to be talking about increasing some of those fees and some of their needs. And that needs to be, I feel like we need to get really up. There's cats.
There's so many cats.
So many cats. And I think being able to have a group of people that sort of pull together questions and get information so everybody can be quickly informed. And then we can figure out early enough, how much more money do we need? So then we can figure that out to try to, and that which kind of leads me to my next thing, which isn't so much a committee, but the county council. They write the checks. They're the purse strings. If we don't have a relationship with them, I feel like we have an opportunity, right? Where we have five districts, I guess they're called districts, right, in the county. And I'm thinking, what would it look like if one member of our team, of our board, took those quarterly reports and hand deliver them to a council member once a quarter. Hi, I'm Rebecca. I'm on the advisory board. I want to deliver this to you and talk to you about these numbers a little bit and just thank you for your support. Bye. Right? We're on their radar. And then when we come back and start asking them for more money to support the Humane Society contract, to support some of the things that animal control needs, ask them for that. Like, hey, can we get a dedicated fund instead of having them pay you for money every second? Like those kinds of things, it's a little harder to say no when, you know, when you have a good rapport or a rapport. And I don't feel like, and mind you, please, I have not been here long. So if I am like, no, we tried that and it did not work. They hated us going, you know, please say so. I'm just trying to figure out ways that we can improve our relationships with the other people that animal control relies on, which is the council and the sheriff's department and the vet community, right? Those other entities that can really help strengthen partnerships and bolster all of these efforts.
Yeah,
so whoever's keeping you guys from getting first responder status and badges and stuff,
I'll tell you, I'll take the sheriff.
I think there was a meeting previously where you brought up each one of the things you talked about. I don't have the records right access, but we talked about communication with the public. We talked about licensing. We talked about going to the board and speaking that. So I'm not sure which meeting that was in. So we've addressed.
We have talked about those issues, and I've brought those issues up before. And you know, here's an example. I'm hopeful that the board is support, the council is supportive. We've had some, you know, I've had to shore up the budget twice this year for two different reasons. I mean, hearings examiner fees was one of them. Humane Society fees was one of them, and they were supportive of doing that. And so I have budget packages going in next month for similar things, including sending people to the Animal Control Academy, some money to wrap our vehicles to have a pet licensing message on them, so that they're basically, you know, traveling billboards all over the county. That costs extra money I don't have in my budget, so I have to ask for that. I have to rationalize it, and they have to accept it and approve it. And so sometimes I think, you know, people, like you said, championing the cause behind the scenes, making it harder for them to look you in the eye and saying no. Those are all very good things, and that strategy has worked in other parts that I've seen, you know, in my labor union days, worked. We would have breakfast or take them out to breakfast, or you know, just, hey, these are our issues, and you know, here's who we are. So
I mean this room is full of people who feel like this is important, right? The animal situation in our county is important. We're here, we prove that every time we show up. And now if we can just enroll those other people to sort of have that same level of commitment.
Well, and Andrea and I have even talked about Andrea coming before the council and talking about exactly that. Mm-hmm. And to, it's almost like it's an education and then like a not a warning, but these are the trends.
Yeah.
And who can speak to the trends better than where these animals are showing up, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
I have my little trends in my office, but they're not that.
Right.
So, yeah.
And would it include like relationships with, because I think public health is such an obvious, you know, also with zoonotic disease. And I mean, to me, that would be really interesting to get.
Yeah.
I mean, I come from global health. So like mm-hmm. that's directly in my wheelhouse. And I even tried to contact them and be like, you know, do you need any ethics input, or like do global health ethics, or didn't hear a word back,
yeah.
But who knows what they're like. I don't know if you guys, but that to me is an obvious absolutely. Link up too.
We have the Humane Society, we have a great relationship with public health.
Okay, great. That makes all the sense in the world. Gosh.
Since we sound like we are, as before, we were supported before, we're supported again,
yeah.
We have discussed how we would meet.
Yeah, it would just be the lifting it off the ground and actually making some movement.
Why don't I start off, like, I can start by just generating a list of committee suggestions and send them out to everybody, and we can just sort of create kind of a living document and then they add to it. And
I don't know if we run afoul of the public records stuff.
But we could agree to have one meeting in the future, set a date, and we could discuss those.
Okay.
Why don't we do that?
Okay.
Have an agenda item next, and if you want to work on a list, I would suggest you have standing committees and then ad hoc committees.
Okay.
And so the standing committees would be kind of a permanent thing, we need year after year, and then maybe an ad hoc.
Okay.
And keep in mind, we're only, you know, 9 people.
Right, exactly.
Let's start there, and we're not having emails that go around, which could.
That's, yeah, okay.
Okay.
What if you set up, like, instead of like committee for this, committee for that, committee for this, and there's 2 people here, because our group is pretty small, it could be like group email, hey, this is a subject that I want to talk about on Saturday, the 15th at Fairway Coffee. If any of you want to show up, talk about it, set up something and bring it to the next meeting.
I've done that before. It really gets all over the place. If we pick, say we're going to have an open committee meeting for anybody who wants to be there on a certain day, bring your topics, and then we can narrow down.
Yeah, same idea.
So the problem with that perhaps, and I don't know, we need to talk here, but it could be a violation of the public meeting.
Right.
If you've got a quorum of this board meeting someplace else, then you might have a violation. If you have committees that are not a quorum.
Okay.
We want to be very careful about that.
Yeah, so it might actually be to our advantage if we just have a couple of people, because we're just bringing ideas, right? We're just like, you've already done a ton of work in relation to education, right? Like you were talking about at the last meeting, some things that you had already done, some legwork. And so obviously to sit down with you and talk about education and then really zero in on messages and ideas, and I mean, it could happen.
We could accommodate Kyle's suggestion by saying we'll have 3 people sign up for a meeting at each time. It's never a quorum. And if you're really interested, you say, I really want to be in this because these are the topics being discussed.
Yeah, I would say suggest we don't appoint people, we have them volunteers.
Okay, yeah, okay, good enough.
And then everybody can be contributing.
Yeah.
And if you don't want a quorum there, which we could mean 4 members could be there.
Yeah, how many do we have? We have 9.
We have 9.
9, yes.
We have 5.
We have 4. And have 5.
So we could have 4 people there, and you can volunteer for it. If you, it's really important, you can make your argument why you want to be there. And we have more than 4 people.
Right. Right.
Okay.
Okay.
So Rebecca can also pitch for this, the revenue one. She also can like saving time and like optimizing time. So I have some ideas for that one.
Right.
And then the security safety that we just talked about, that one seems to be a mega topic by itself. But that seems like there's a lot of.
Well, you know, and public health is, that's such a great piece of low hanging fruit to kind of enroll government officials, right?
Yeah.
You start talking public health, they'll be like, well, we better listen, right?
So, yeah. I'm not really sure that this body falls under that. So I will get clarification.
Yeah. In the beginning, there was some talk about it. And so that's where that's coming from.
Yeah, it just says when a quorum of a city council, board of county commissioners, or other governing body gathers with the intent of transacting the governing body's business.
Well, if we're not holding votes, would that be considered?
Informational gathering.
Yeah, it's like we're just gathering information.
You're not a governing body.
Yeah, I think that would be the key.
You're not a governing body.
Meeting is considered doing business.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And you're Washington law. So okay. That would be, but that could be something. But when we came on early on, we were warned about public meetings,
yes,
request violations, and things. And so everybody had to be very careful. Okay. All right, I think we're at the end of our list.
I would ask for one thing, not that we need to, so late, I hate to fully delve into it because maybe it could take the entire time of a normal meeting.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, right. At some point, I would like it the next agenda or whatever. I'd email it. I was like, it's my.
Oh, it was the horse.
Yes.
The equine.
But there is a huge equine code
Oh, is that the rural event center? Is that what you're talking about?
No.
No, about boarding stables.
There's a huge, so. Sorry, I'm not.
We're talking about cases in code enforcement where they're telling people they have to have permits for their facilities.
So there is that.
That's me.
Okay. Yes. So there is that. Basically, we are needing fair, reasonable, and consistent codes in Clark County for horse boarding facilities. Right now, trying to keep it short and sweet. Right now, the codes that we have, they were snuck in 2010. They were not asked by the equine community. They were not created by horse people. They are ridiculous. Soundproof buildings, horses can't be turned out at night. Indoor sprinkler systems, nobody's grandfathered in. There is not one single boarding facility in Clark County that is up to code. Not one. Even the new ones.
With the soundproof yep. thing that sounds out.
Soundproofing for horses and no turnout. I mean, they're livestock. They are like cows. They need to be able to go outside if the owner's determined that that's what's best for their horses. I can go through the whole slew of the list. That's just kind of the quick, easy peasy, and that's, not
yep.
it.
Yeah, we can maybe put it on, set aside some time next meeting.
I think you can talk about it here. I'll give you a little bit of information. Animal Control Advisory Board is tasked with Title 8 of the code.
Mm-hmm.
The changes to code that you're talking about are in Title 40.
Okay.
They require, it's the zoning code, it's the land use department, yep. and it's the planning commission.
So I understand that. And then mm-hmm. there is the actual stuff that does fall under animal control too. So I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But is there any way that as animal control board, that we could recommend what our stance is to the building and ags and the permits and all that? Because right now, as the permits stand, they want to look at horse boarding facilities like it's a Walmart.
So you're asking, can a board here take a position
yes.
that would then be
can
able
we make
to be taken to
you have a recommendation to the Clark County Council?
Yeah, I don't see where you could not have a recommendation. That's totally fine. I think that would require, in order for you to make the best recommendation that you can,
mm-hmm.
that you have that it's vetted, that you have all the information mm-hmm. and you understand what needs to be changed, what and how.
Yes.
You know, fire and building code or fire and building code.
Yes.
I would say that it falls under 3A, perform such further duties as may be authorized or corrected by resolution of the board. So there's an avenue there.
Okay.
But we do need to get it on the agenda.
That would be lovely. And the horse community is extremely grateful
yeah.
that you allowed my disposition. Because it is a huge issue. We are really feeling pushed out by Clark County Council and people and stuff.
And that needs to be, you need to be like the first person.
I promise there wouldn't, but it's huge. And we used to be one of the most horse densely populated counties mm-hmm. in the entire United States.
Yes.
And we are being pushed out like crazy and
dairy.
Hard. And that's why we have so few dairies. And the dairy farmers warned us. Oh, and we had to, just so you guys know, we had, us horse community had to hire had to hire an attorney as a group. And only then did the council sweep it under the rug after COVID. And now it's popping its ugly head again. And it's not okay. And so I really appreciate your.
Okay, so let's put that under
yeah.
one of the orders. So we have a
yeah.
category tonight,
mm-hmm.
and
yep.
then we'll make a note that for the agenda item, maybe you could prepare
yeah.
some information
okay.
that we can add in the materials, and then we'll have it on our agenda for the next.
Thank you. And like I said, the equine community is like, oh, thank goodness we have a voice on board.
And it means a lot to us. And then I can add it to the next agenda too, but there are overall, you know, we all want to be, I mean, of course, there's always a few obstacles, right? Most of us, we want to be great, law-abiding and all of that. We also do with the animal control board, you know, there are like clarifying neglect and abuse standards. You know, how many horses, I thought we already have how many horses to a property or whatever. But anyways, there's some areas, I've heard of some facilities that might be in question, you know. So it's entertaining because it's like, well, we need to protect us and stuff in certain areas. We really need that. But yet,
bad actors.
There's some bad actors too. Does that make sense? So I'm not saying we're all sunshine and roses and that, you know, especially, you know, and, you know, most people like with dogs and cats, we love our animals. We take great care of them. But there are some that I have heard where, you know, I had somebody contact me, though, you know, who can I call to, you know, to report some things and that. So there are, you know, clarifications in that that would be part of the animal control board, I believe. So anyways, thank you for listening. I know it's been a late night, and sorry for the tears.
No apologies.
Any code changes? Because I had a question about just code changes. Like, how can we go about it again as a board? Like, if I had some ideas
for actual like animal issues. I mean, this is my understanding. I mean, I'm speaking now. Like, I've heard of horses being doubled up in like a 12x12 stall, and that. I don't. I don't think two big horses should be in a 12x12 stall together. Now, I do think it should be okay if it's a shared stall, but with an unsizable run off of the stall, so they can go in and out as they want and they have space. So like those little details, you know, but I've, you know, heard of, okay, well, horses being doubled up, crammed together, never getting out. Well, so that's where in the code, you know, making sure that those can be, we can call animal control and have safety concerns and health concerns taken care of for those horses. And yet, you know, well, I mean, I'll just be flat out honest, okay? Right now, I have a few horses in stalls with a run, and it's a nice sized run, and they get along. So it's, you know, what would the animal board feel is, you know, and how many square feet is the run, you know?
Just sort of like really drilling down into the specifics.
Yeah.
Or, like, almost like the shelter, the ABMA shelter guide of like.
Oh, the ASB guide.
Where it's just like a deep dive into every specific thing.
What is the
are there nutrition requirements? There are for shelters.
Yeah.
No, there are, I know. I'm talking
but
about
for horses.
For horses.
That'd be interesting.
But I don't know. So there's industry standards. Like, typically it's, you know, like I would never put two horses in a 12x12 stall just together. Now that is, it is not common to put two horses in a 12x12 stall. It's not an industry standard.
See, what would be really,
that's where I would frown upon that. Now, my horses have access to a decent sized run, and so they can come in on the shelter and then go outside and move and, you know, make sure that they get along and all of that and stuff. And my horses get 24/7 hay. So there's not the social dynamic of
changing the code has been really difficult because we've tried the three length of a dog's leash tether. Mm-hmm. You have a 3-foot dog, it has a 9-foot thing, and they're stuck there all day, every day. And then the other one was barking. Yeah. The way it's written is difficult to assess because it's they have to bark for 10 minutes. So out of every 45 minutes, we tried to reword it to make it simpler.
Yeah.
Well, and it just hasn't been able to go through.
If there's something like of national standards, if there's almost like a, like you said, a guide, there is a guide, that like a national standard.
Yeah.
Of how to operate an animal shelter.
A professional organization that is nationally recognized.
That says this is how you should care for horses.
Because I'm going to tell you, I'm getting nauseous only because I'm an enforcement person. And badly written code is my worst nightmare.
Yeah.
So it would have to be something that would be
nice and
effective.
Clear.
It has to be effective.
Well, say it like, to me because I'd like to reword.
Yeah.
I like to
know.
I'm not.
And honestly, I understand what you mean because like 2 minutes for horses in a 12 by 12 stall, that's typically what you do with minis, you know, because they don't need all that space. So it would be entertaining.
Yeah. See,
that they're taking care of their, can't say sanitary, it's not hospital, right? But you know, healthy conditions and all of that, and just
maybe I'll bring the ASV guidelines or send them to all you guys because I think there is some wording in there that could be very helpful, at least to start the conversation, because it talks about every animal
standing
the
up
five
and
freedoms, the five freedoms.
Yeah,
so they should have the freedom to move around, to lay down, to have access to food and water, to be able to behave in the manner of which they are.
Yeah.
Dogs should be able to behave like a dog, horse should be able to behave like a horse.
Yeah.
And so I think that could maybe be a good starting point, because if you think about two good-sized horses, right, you know, in a stall together, they're missing some of those freedoms right there, because they're not going to be able to lay down together in that 12-by-12 stall.
Yep.
They're likely not going to be able to turn around efficiently in that 12-by-12. So that's maybe a good starting
condition to be part of those five things, because I see a guy who has a dog, two dogs, and they have a big size kennel. They got about half the space of this room, but there's nowhere the dog, either dog can go other than in the small doghouse where they both go in there with it. The rest of it is all mud. I mean, they're walking around mud this deep once the rains start, and it just breaks my heart to see that, you know. So well, I would love to work on both.
It is,
Okay.
You know,
all right.
Anyway, thank you.
I've done a horrible job marshaling this case. I'm going to go ahead and adjourn the meeting for now, and we'll all go home. But look forward to having more discussion about all of this at the next
meeting. And somebody had asked that last time at the end of the meeting that they had like a lot of questions, you know, and stuff for the equine community and that too. So please gather some questions and I'll be glad to answer to the best of my ability. Thank you guys.
We're adjourned.
Woo! Woo! Yeah.